Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What is happening, everybody? We are back yet again, another episode, DNMs with Dean. And I'm excited to bring you this episode because I sit down with Sid the Entertainer. Now, I first met Sid probably a couple months ago when my housemate Sultan invited me to hip hop class. At the time, I was actually still recovering from the neck injury, so I ended up just going and shooting some photos. But when we got there, you know, when you're around someone and they're just high energy and you can't help but getting lifted by the way they carry themselves and what they say and do. So met Sid and instantly was just like, I need to talk to this guy. I need to share his story. I need to share where he pulls this, I guess, happiness, excitement, love, passion, all of these different things, and how he can carry himself the way he does in front of a crowd of people. And from that moment on, I was like, hey, I run a podcast. If you want to come jump on, you're always welcome. So we got Sid, the Entertainer, in the booth, and we just kind of share his story from coming from India and how he wasn't always that outgoing ball of energy that he is now, and how he'd actually feel quite sick being in front of people and entertaining, and the process of going from that to then actually entertaining in front of the Queen and teaching them how to dance. So he taught Liz how to bust a move, how to pop and lock, and now he's on the Gold Coast running a studio for hip hop, and then also building confidence in people, giving people the confidence, whether it's in business, personal life, pretty much all aspects of your life, to build that confidence and then take that and be the person that you should be. So really enjoyed this episode. It was one where the time just kind of flew by and we kind of touched a whole different array of topics and the ones I really enjoy. So I hope you guys enjoy it as well. Before we jump into it, you guys are sick of eating tablets, you're sick of all these different things in your morning routine. We'll make your morning routine simple. Athletic Greens, AG1. If you get that, one scoop, 75 whole food ingredients to make you feel good, give you gut health, give you immune health, boost your energy levels, just do all that good stuff you know you need. And hey, guess what? We're giving away 5 free travel packs and 1 year supply of vitamin D. All you got to do is jump on the link in the description, follow the prompts, and try some AG1. Get your day started right. Now, without further ado, here's Sid the Entertainer. Now, I was looking at your Instagram bio.
Yep.
And I wrote down some notes so I wouldn't forget what you are, but it says confidence coach, party, what do you got? Happiness dealer.
Party instigator. And a happiness dealer.
I thought the happiness dealer, I was like, that could be taken a few different
ways. I know. I had someone actually tell me, I didn't realize when I wrote it on my bio, it had automatically like split the words happiness dealer. Happiness was on one line, dealer was on the other. So when she read it, she's like, it just says you're a dealer. I'm like, no, I'm a happiness, I deal happiness. And just, so I had to go back. And this is after like 2 or 3 years of it being that way. I only had this pointed out to me like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, bro.
And so I've gone back and like changed it to the happiness dealer. So it's on one line.
I just imagine sharing your profile to like clients and stuff. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's a bit of a side hustle going.
Oh my
there.
God, like for 3 or 4 years, dude. I had no idea.
I was going to say, you'd probably get in trouble at a festival if you were going around saying you're a happiness.
I used to have I have the sick diesel knit. Mm. And the sweater, on the sweater, it says happiness dealer. That's where I got it from. Oh, okay. Yeah. And so I was like, that's so sick. That's exactly what I am. And so I made that my professional title. Mm. And so I'd hand out business cards with that as a professional title. And the amount of people that would come up to me being like, so what kind of happiness are you dealing? How much for a bag of happiness? I'm like, dude, I'm giving out hugs.
How much for a bag of happiness?
Oh, this has been so badly misconstrued.
So good at the same time. But yeah. Also, you get some stories out of it.
Oh, man. It's a conversation starter.
I was going to say, it's a great way to get it off the ground. But I was going to say with that, like, you do obviously carry with yourself a lot of confidence. You do almost that larger-than-life personality. And you get attracted to that when you're a person because it's like you want that energy around you. You want to be lifted up. You want to feel more, see more, be more. Have you always been that high energy, or was there a turning point? Or was there something that happened that made you go, okay, I need to get more out of life?
Dude, I'm a first generation immigrant. So I moved from India to Australia when I was 8. I moved here with like a thick Indian accent in a school where, you know, there were no other brown people. There was no one of my color when I moved there. And so I was the outside. I was awkward. I was shy. I was introverted. I was trying desperately to fit in a world that I didn't know how to fit into. And so having gone from, like, I often think if I was to sit down with like 8 or 10 year old Sid and have a conversation with where he was and then tell him the stuff we've done, it would blow his mind. Like it's not a linear path, but having travel that path myself, that's why I've kind of lent into, I've felt the calling to start to teach what I know, because I've gone from not having it to now being able to do it. And so I know what it takes to overcome those hurdles.
You become more useful, hey?
Yeah, man.
Way more useful, because you've touched both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
You've been that point where you weren't confident, you felt like an outsider, you didn't feel comfortable. And you go, all right, we need to change this.
Yep.
And then you go straight to the other end of the spectrum and you go, okay, I can bring people up
along
this with me.
Yeah.
And was that the – so when was the shift then? Did you find – was there a point in particular when you felt that shift to go, okay, we're going this direction now?
Probably through high school. Like before then, I would still – and I thank my parents for pushing me into drama, public speaking, debating. That's – thanks to my dad. My dad is super theatrical and he's an amateur magician. So that was his, I grew up with that. But if I didn't have that push, I wouldn't have faced the fear. There was a point, like, I remember when I was like 11 or 12 doing the school musical and my mum would be standing in the wings with a vomit bucket. So I would get out on stage, be all confident, say my lines, and then I would run off stage, throw up, drink water, have a mint, back out on stage. Like, the anxiety was real. But it was just repeated exposure. Then through high school, the more I did it, the more I got addicted to, I guess, like, the ovation or the kudos that you get as a performer. And I was like, oh, man, that actually feels good.
What was the feeling after you got off stage?
It was, back in the day, it used to be relief. Like, when I first started, it was just relief that it was over. But then the relief started to turn into like being proud of myself. So just being really joyous that I, you know, it's that euphoria of getting off stage in front of however many people you perform in front of. And back in the day, you know, in primary school, it was just a couple of hundred. You go to high school, maybe it's 1,000. But even at that stage, I never saw a career in this. So to have taken that now where I'm happy on stage in front of 100,000 people, doesn't faze me.
I was going to say, it doesn't feel any different, like going to 50 people, 100,000, is there any difference in confidence that goes into that?
Not at all, no. And the funny thing is I still feel just as nervous before I start, but I've converted that fear into excitement.
You kind of want to feel nervous though.
Yeah.
Like I always say, if you care about something,
yep.
No matter if it's a job, a girl, an opportunity, if you don't care,
yep.
Like, and you're not anxious or a little bit nervous, like, why are you doing it?
Absolutely. My dad had this rule where he was like, you have to have two butterflies in your stomach. No more, no less. So he's like, if you have more than two butterflies, if you're feeling really nervous, quantify it. And then he'd have me stand on the side of the stage and visualize me pulling the butterflies out of my stomach until I had two. And if I didn't have any, he's like, you don't care. So give yourself a reason to care. Mm. Give yourself something to feel nervous about. But don't overshoot the mark. Just have those two.
It's a balancing act. Yeah. Because like you say, you don't want to, because, and also saying you can be nervous, but if you're not preparing for something, you're going to be so nervous.
Yeah.
But you can still prepare like hell and still not get the result or not feel like you're still where you need to be. So you're going to have those two butterflies.
Absolutely, man. And it's also just, there's always the unknown. Like you can prepare, but you just never know. The unknown is the audience. So, you know, the unknown is you get out there and say your thing and do your thing, but how it's received gives me that edge of being like, oh, I really want this. And now I'm at a point where I want it to be good for them. I don't want it to be good for me anymore. I don't really, you know, it's not about me when I step on stage. If I'm on stage and I'm hosting an event or, you know, I'm presenting or keynote speaking or, you know, if I'm motivating, it's, for me, it's about what they're getting out of it. So I really want it to be good for them.
Mm. What do you think your biggest bit of advice for someone as that young kid that's going through those nerves?
Yep.
What's the best thing that they can beat those nerves? Like you said, constant exposure of that thing. Yep. That was the best for you, or do you have like little tricks that you
constant should? Exposure, but then there were two thoughts that kind of get me through, and I still think of these today. One is that you can't say the wrong thing to the right person. So you can't say the wrong thing to the right people, and people spend so much time thinking about what they're going to say. But that's not what's at stake. That's not really the main issue. As long as you make those people the right people, then it doesn't matter what you say. So they'll forgive you your mistakes. They'll allow you to slip up. Like everything you do will be absolutely perfect for them. So if you spend that energy in making sure they're the right people, that changes everything. The other thing that gets me through is knowing, and this I learned as a freestyle dancer, so learning to express myself and be so content in my own self-expression. There's no one in the world who can speak like me better than I can speak like me. There's no one in the world who can express like me better than I can express like me. There's no one in the world who can dance like me better than I can dance. There's no one in the world who can dance like Dino better than Dino can dance like Dino, right? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I get what you're saying.
The second you realize that you are the single expert at whatever your form of expression is, it removes the judgment. And so then as a kid, you just go, okay, like, this is me. And it may suck, but this is me expressing myself right now, and that's okay.
I guess that comes back to then the right people will see that.
Yes.
And want to be around that.
Yep.
And the people that don't aren't your people anyway.
Absolutely, man. Because the converse is true. You can't say the right thing to the wrong person. I'm sure people out there have been in, you know, if you've been in a relationship and there's no way you can possibly explain yourself and it's not being understood, or you're in an argument with someone, you know, and you're like, why aren't you understanding me? Because they're not seeing you. They're not the right person at that time.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that thing you just said there, they're not seeing you.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember I was going through a breakup and I just remember saying those exact words, like, you don't see who I am.
Yeah.
And you keep trying to convince them that you are something, and if they don't see it, like you said, they're not the right person right now. But it's hard when obviously you care about someone and you're like, you're not seeing, like, you can't see, I'm right here. Like, you just like,
yeah.
I always joke around. I always think it's like, if you could actually read thoughts.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if you could read thoughts.
Oh, man.
It'd be the best and worst thing ever.
Oh, I don't know how I feel about it.
I think I want something for you.
Yeah. I think I enjoy not being able to read thoughts. Although that being said, being like a movement coach or, you know, being a confidence coach, I am very aware of like reading body language. And so it's almost, I feel like I almost have that gift.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's just not like, it's a guess at the moment.
Mm. Maybe just a few thoughts. Like, you can just read my love thoughts. Don't read the other thoughts.
Don't read my journal.
Yeah. You just pull out little bits you want to give to them.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that's exactly right. Like if you're expressing yourself to your true authentic self, and then the people that are attracted to that are your people.
That's it.
And the people that aren't. And it's being okay with that.
Yeah.
And not just wanting to feel it. Like we're so drawn to being accepted.
Yep.
We lose track of being ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't have to be understood or accepted for a long time.
Totally.
If you're not around those people.
Yep.
And that's okay.
Man, over the last 4 years, I've done a complete 180. Like 4 or 5 years ago, I was the biggest people pleaser. Like my sense of vibe creation or my sense of like being in a space and people enjoying my presence or my energy, it was so like in my head dependent on them liking me. And so I would change my frequency to match the frequency of those around me. And that was A, tiring, but B, it just meant that I didn't have a solid sense of self. Like I would just bend over backwards for anyone and everyone just to make sure that, you know, I hope you like me. And in the last 5 years, I've gotten rid of that completely. I've found myself so much more in line with my mission, in line with my purpose, just in line with who Sid is, that I've reached that point where, you know, those that mind don't matter and those that matter don't mind.
Mm. And you were saying before as you walked in, you're like, all these good things are happening now.
Yeah.
And you've been in those moments where you're thinking, why is so much good stuff happening?
Yeah.
And then you realize like, oh, because I'm just doing what I know. Like you're listening to yourself, your intuition, yeah. You're around the right people, you're doing the right things. And you're like, why is life so good now? It's like you created that.
Yeah, 100%. And that happens when you're in flow. I feel like when you're in alignment with your universal calling, when you're being pulled along by something rather than pushing, everything just falls out of the way and just magic happens. You know, magic that's for stuff that you didn't even think was possible. And it just unfolds in front of you in a way that you were like, you know, not being able to predict a how,
yeah,
but just having a fixated vision. And then just when the universe goes, oh, this is how it's going to happen, you're like, whoa, it's mind blowing.
And I think it's having confidence in saying yes to more things.
Yeah.
Like say yes to things that, like, what's the worst that can happen in certain scenarios? You go, oh, if I say yes to that. And I guess we always just, yeah, we do focus on the negative that may come with it. We don't focus on the positive. But again, it comes back to that unknown.
Yeah.
It's just like, know yourself enough.
Yeah.
What's your, like, do you have a method or like key things that you do to kind of go back into yourself and kind of when you need to make a hard decision to be like, okay, I need to do this for this reason? Do you get like breath work or meditation stuff?
I was just going to say, I meditate. So I meditate on it. And in that meditative space, I try to silence everything in my head and just listen to my gut, because I feel like my gut is the one that's connected to, you know, the direction of the universe. And when I get that intuitive pull, and it could be a pull towards or a pull away, I try and trust that. So often your head comes up with all the logical pros and cons list, you know, cost benefit analysis and stuff, but that's not necessarily, I mean, that's, you know, that's so you looking at the world through your own lens. And that lens may have been created by your environment, by your experiences, by the people you're around, by, you know, the belief system you've created in your head, that like it takes a bit of work to shut that up.
Mm. You said from your like listen to your gut.
Mm.
What about your heart? When's that, where does that come into the two?
I think the heart is closer to your universal space than your head is, because I think emotions are the language of the universe. But I think your heart can be misled as well.
Yeah, it can.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Like we sometimes follow that path only to our, I say detriment, but you know, everything happens for a reason. So you probably followed that path to learn a lesson. Mm. But your gut knows.
It's funny. Yeah, I was going to say when your heart's saying the same thing as your head and then your gut's saying the complete opposite thing.
Yeah. Oh, man. And it's so funny because when that happens, you're like, we're so quick to listen to our heart. Mm. I feel like we're so quick to follow that step, and
it doesn't have to make sense.
No,
doesn't have to make any sense.
No,
like at least your head will make sense out of a situation and be a bit more rational.
Yeah,
and then your heart just wipes that completely,
ignores it
completely. Yeah,
but your gut knows. The first time I heard my gut speak the loudest was like a sliding doors moment for me. So I used to be, before I was a vibe creator, I mean, I was always a vibe creator, but
before I had the business card.
Before I was a professional happiness dealer. I was a corporate lawyer. So I had like practiced, I'd like studied down in Melbourne, come out, was practicing. And, well, I mean, I was corporate commercial. I wasn't loving what I was doing. But I loved three things. I loved traveling the world. I loved entertainment. And I loved law. And I was like, if two of those things could come together, you know, I'll do the third for fun. I thought it was going to be entertainment law that would have come together and I would have traveled the world for fun. And then I got like a foot in the door for a dream legal opportunity. So I love the creative side of things, and I was looking at an IP lawyer role for Lonely Planet, the travel guides. And am I allowed to? I don't know. I'm allowed to mention. I don't even know if they exist anymore.
It's your show, dude.
Great, bro. And so the same. It was insane. In this 1 week, I was looking at finalizing the contract for this role, and in that same week, I got given a contract for an audition I'd done like 10 months beforehand for Nickelodeon to go and manage a show that they had on a cruise ship sailing from New York to Bahamas. And so my head, my family, my friends, everyone was like, why is this even an option? Like, dude, you've done 10 years in law. This is the next natural step. This is not only the next natural step. How lucky are you to get, you know, your dream position? Like, you've manifested this. This is what you were looking for. And in that moment, like, my intuition spoke up louder than it's ever spoken. And I just had this feeling that, yeah, I've been in law for a decade, but I've been Sid my whole life. And that Nickelodeon role just felt like the natural progression of this being. And so at the end of the week, I signed that contract and I jumped on a ship with SpongeBob SquarePants.
And looking back now, you'd be so happy that you made that decision.
Yep.
But like it's how to, I guess, yeah, it's knowing yourself enough in those moments to look, well, it's just knowing yourself, man. Like, everyone will tell you what to do.
Yeah.
But like, they don't know.
No.
They don't feel what you feel.
No.
And everyone's going to have an opinion of what they think's best for you, but like, no one walks in your shoes. No one knows how you feel about a certain scenario. And it's also okay to change directions.
Yes.
At any point.
Yeah, absolutely.
At any point. I think you need to always have that in the back of your mind that, if we go this way, that's fine as well as if we go that way.
Yeah.
They're both good options.
And I think COVID, if anything, taught us all how important it is to be agile. Like I saw such a massive, I don't know if you saw it in your circle of friends, in my circle of friends, there was this huge sense of loss of identity because people, I mean, when you start a conversation with someone new, in the first three questions, you go, what do you do? Right. And people define their identity by what they do. Suddenly, when they didn't have what they did, there was this whole sense of who am I? Who am I without that job? And what I learned is, and this used to happen when I was as a lawyer, because when I was working as a lawyer, I was still dancing in the evenings with a hip hop crew. I was teaching acting. I was teaching dancing. You know, I was doing so much stuff that when people asked me what I did, I struggled to answer that question because I knew whatever I answered it with first, I'd be in a box in their head.
Dealer.
Yeah.
Easy, bro.
Easy. Straight up. The rest is just for fun. Yeah. That's the bread and butter.
Just keeps the lights on. The rest is just, you know, a bit of a hobby.
Yeah. No, and so
I get what you're saying, though. I get what
you're saying. Yeah. From the very early stage, I started answering that question with, when people would ask me what I did, my answer became, I be Sid. And so this was like in my early mid-20s, I started really connecting with this thought that I just be Sid. And I wake up being Sid, you know, 24 hours, 7 days a week, and different people pay Sid to do different things. Because that was the only way I could kind of like rationalize my existence in my mind. And it ended up being such an amazing tool because then when the world turned upside down and everyone lost what they did, it didn't really rock that fundamental belief I had in who I was. I'm like, I'm still being Sid. Sid has to adapt and now do different stuff. So it allowed me to be really agile.
Mm. We do attach ourselves to what we do, not who we are.
Absolutely, man.
And like you said, it's dangerous because as soon as you lose that thing,
yep,
you lose your identity and who you are.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it could be, it doesn't have to be a job. You know, people identify themselves by the hobbies they have. I'm a hiker, I'm a surfer, that's not who you are.
Yeah, but it's even roles. I'm a mum, yep. I'm a dad, I'm a uncle.
Absolutely, like, yeah.
Which is not, it's not a bad thing, but it's also if you define yourself by that,
yep,
without that, like your kids move out of home.
Yes.
Like, I'm not a mum anymore.
Yep.
Well, you still are, but you're not your version or archetype of what you think a mum is.
But that's also not who you are. I love asking that question. Who are you? I don't, because people get thrown by it. I'm like, who, like, what makes you passionate? If you tell me what makes you passionate, or like, you know, what makes you happy, what fills your cup, that gives me a better picture of who you are than if I ask you what you do.
Mm. A question I always ask people, I'm going to ask you now. I normally ask it at the end, but it's a good segue.
Yeah.
How do you want to be remembered?
Man, my goal in life is to, one, be a vibe, but I love the idea of leading by example, and in doing that, giving other people permission to be their most confident selves. So I would love to have, like, you know, to have a legacy of human beings who've stepped outside their comfort zone because they were given permission to do so just by me existing.
I really like that. And I like the fact that this is probably stemmed from going back to when you were a kid and you felt like that one, there was a bit of it, like, and I can relate to this as myself, growing up small country town, bit isolated, bit removed in a sense. And that obviously triggers something in you that you don't want other people to feel like that.
Absolutely.
So then you do everything in your power to make sure people don't.
Yep.
And you see the value in that because you know it's a representation of yourself in them.
Yeah.
And you can make both parties feel so much better.
Yep.
Just by doing what you know you should do anyway.
Yeah.
It's like a win on every level.
Yeah, man.
pretty
I just get to be me, and then I just want other people to look at that as an example and go, oh man, if he can do it, I can do it.
Mm.
You know, there's, and then knowing that I have the tools to teach people that, knowing that I, because some people, I've had to piece a lot of this stuff together, and I've drawn from a lot of amazing mentors and inspirations. But now, having kind of compacted it all into this being, I'm like, I can give this to you.
Packages.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a one-stop shop.
Because it's fun, 'cause you live by that, and I see you live by that.
Yep.
And because I ask that question to a lot of people, and again, they're thrown.
Mm.
And it should be really simple because you shouldn't have to think about it. It's just think how you live your life every day.
Yeah.
That's how you're going to be remembered.
Yep,
so
absolutely.
So like if you're listening to this right now and just say, ask you, how do you want to be remembered?
Yeah.
You just got to think, how do I live every day?
Absolutely.
And how you live every day is how you're going to be remembered. So it shouldn't be a thought. It just be like, well, how do I live every day?
That's it.
Like this, am I going to be remembered as a positive or a negative person?
Man, that's a beautiful question as well, because it forces you to face your mortality.
Mm.
Because people are uncomfortable with that, I've found in conversations. We live as if we're going to live forever. We know we're not, but people live as if, you know, they put things off. If they have a higher version of themselves that they want to attain, they're like, I'll start tomorrow, sort of thing. But I'm like, what if you don't wake up tomorrow? And I love that question. How do you want to be remembered? Suddenly puts you in that position of being like, okay, if this is the last conversation I have, what is the legacy?
I think we look at life as being this huge volume of time.
Mm.
And you break it down and it's really not.
Yep.
And you break it down. I was thinking this the other day because a friend was talking how many times they were going to see their partner, like we'll have 3 days to see their partner before one went to Europe for 5 or 6 months.
Yeah.
And they're like, we have 16 full days. And they live together. So they see each other every day. But yeah, we have 16 full days that we can go explore, go do whatever, like live life.
Yeah.
And I thought about that. I started thinking about, we don't know how many times we're going to see a lot of people, but then just say your family. Okay, I moved away. I might see my family 3 times a year, if that. And then how many more years may they live? Just say 20 average or something like that. You break that down. You're like, okay, I'm going to probably see my parents like 150 or 300 more times. And you think about it like that. So you're like, make sure that you enjoy each one of those times.
Yeah.
Because when you look at it like that, you go, oh shit, that's not that many. And you don't know if it's going to be a good interaction, a bad interaction, how many hours you're going to see them for, how, like, you don't know.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
But you kind of quantify your life into those little moments with people, and you realize you have to make the most of it because it's not going to be there forever. And I can't talk, and obviously I'm still alive, but I had like that really bad accident you saw.
Yeah.
And I remember laying on the ground and I just kept thinking, there's so much of life I didn't do. I was like, I'm never going to fly again. I'm never going to like be on a plane. I'm never going to like run, never going to have sex, never going to, like, all these things just flooding through my brain.
Yeah.
And it made me realize that we don't know how much time we have, and we don't know how many times we're going to have an opportunity to be able to do something that we really want to do. So if you have the option to do it,
do it.
Listen to your gut and do it.
Do it. Absolutely, man. Because we take it for granted. Last year I had a homie, uh, a friend of mine was just murdered. Just, you know, out of the blue, young dude as well. Got in a fight. That fight was it, done. And he was, you know, it's one of those really sobering thoughts of you don't know when your last day is. So if you're acting like it's not coming up, you're wasting time. You know, like think of that we have such a limited time to achieve our full potential and be our highest selves. And if you're not working towards that, I personally think that's like that it's a waste. I know that may be a hard thing for people to hear, but if you're not working on what that highest version of yourself is, just because you don't know when it's going to end.
Mm. I've got friends that work in like aged care,
mm.
and that's the biggest regret from people in aged care is like, I didn't do enough.
Yeah,
didn't do more.
Yeah,
there's so much on the table still.
No one regrets the stuff that they did, right?
Yeah.
As good or bad or ugly, you know, like it's either going to be a win or a story. So either which way, if you're on your deathbed, like, yeah, you only regret that you regret the shots you didn't take.
Mm. And some wisdom from it probably as well.
Yeah.
A lot of wisdom. Because I've had this thing where I'm going to do it at some point. I keep saying I'm going to do it, but it's one of those things, just go do it. I want to just like solo travel by myself.
Yeah.
Like one way ticket kind of stuff.
Yep.
And I thought about it, and like you said, like you're never going to go solo travel around the world and look back when you're 70, 80 or in a year's time or whenever and go, oh, I wish I never did that.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I didn't meet all those people. I wish I didn't go to these cool places. I wish I didn't.
Yeah. Ever.
Ever.
Nah.
Ever. It's like, and then it comes back, you've got the opportunity to do something.
Yeah.
Go after it and do it.
And I've come to appreciate that different people's minds are wired differently, but I never really understood when I'd meet and talk to people who had no interest to leave the country or leave their city.
Mm.
You know, like these, you meet people who, and I don't know, it's a small town thing. Maybe they're people you might have grown up with, but like people who are born, raised, live and die in that same 5 kilometer radius.
Mm.
And that's something that I've just not understood.
Yeah, I'm the same. And I have thought about it. Sometimes I'm not jealous.
Yeah.
But to be content.
Yeah.
With this is my life and I'm happy with this.
Yeah.
And I don't want more. I don't want more. Because you could use the same logic with money.
Yeah.
And you see these people that keep striving towards more with money and then they'll see someone that's like, I'm good with making this amount of money. That's fine. I'm okay. And then you see other people like, I will never stop.
Yeah.
And I know travel is a bit different because obviously I feel like experiencing different cultures helps you level up as a person.
Mm.
But I guess the people with money look at that, like having more money helps you level up as a person as well. So it's, I think I used to look at people as being wrong for not wanting to explore the world or not wanting to see more or be more.
Yeah.
But again, it's not wrong. It's different.
That's what I'm coming to terms with.
Yeah, completely fine with it.
Yeah, and that we're just wired differently.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I just try and ask people, be like, do you want to see more? Like, because I traveled a lot as a kid and it shaped who I am as a person. And I'm so happy with being able to do that. And it was all subconscious at the time.
Mm.
Like you just see different cultures, different people, different places. And you go, okay, the world's a pretty big place and there's a lot of difference out there. So I'm not going to just look at something as being, this is the way it should happen because everyone does stuff differently.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, 100.
Did you felt like you traveled a lot as a kid as well?
Yeah, well, growing up, my dad was with the bank and the bank job was 2-year postings at a time. So I was never in a city for longer than 2 years. So originally in India, like in the 8 years before I lived here, I was in 4 different cities and then moved to Australia for a couple of years, then back to India for a year and then back here. So like the longest I went to a school was 3 years, which meant, you know, it made it hard. Not hard to make friends, but hard to keep friends because you had a new group of friends every couple of years. But it meant that I had to become good at making friends. So that was a beautiful, you know, trade-off because I loved meeting new people. I loved like diving into new stories of people in a brand new city. And, you know, that was always fun for me.
Did you find you had lots of friends, but it was hard to keep that deeper connection with people?
Yeah.
Because you're constantly pulled away.
Yeah. And then it was, I mean, at that age as well, when you move countries or move cities, you can't, this is pre-internet. Like, there's no way of keeping in touch with your friends. You don't know your mate's, you know, residential address to send him letters. You're just like, oh, that was a good guy. I wish him well. I hope he's all right.
It's kind of nice as well, though.
Yeah.
And when you do, if you do go back, obviously sometimes you won't, but if you do go back, you're like, what's been going on?
Yeah.
Like you actually have no clue.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you feel like you felt that a few times?
Yeah. I think the oldest friends I probably have are when I started primary school here in Australia. And they're the only ones that, thanks to, you know, MySpace, I was able to like reconnect with back in the day, and then over to Facebook and Insta. But yeah, outside that, man, it's just one of those things that it, which has allowed me also to not hold on to things. Like, I feel like the more you accept the temporariness of life, the easier it is to flow through it. Mm. Whether it's good or bad, like the bad times, you know, this too shall pass. The good times you love, and you love that much more because you know it's not a forever state, so it allows you to be super present and be in it. But it, I just learned that there was no constant.
Yeah, everything comes and goes.
Mm.
It's, I always battle with that thought, especially when it comes to people, to say like relationships.
Yeah.
And you get attached, you get emotional, you get feelings, and then it ends. And the logical sense would be, well, that didn't work. I'll probably be a better person for this. All good.
Yeah.
But then your heart goes, oh, I'm heartbroken. I was so in love. That was meant to be the one. And you play that over in your head. But then when it does get to that, it's like, how do you be okay with that? But then also when you have emotion and feeling attached, how you don't get like over. Because like you said, nothing's a constant. Everything, it's like appreciating something that comes and goes.
Yeah.
And just enjoying it while it's there and knowing it came in at the right time. And it probably left at the right time.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
But it's like, how do you balance that mindset of being okay with that, but without getting...
You still have a heart to shut up.
Yeah. No, you know what I mean? Because it's like absolutely. The more attached you get, you don't... Like we hold on to things we really like.
We do, man.
And then that can be detrimental to the whole process of meeting all that person or having that thing.
And I blame, like, it's like the Disney effect, right? Growing up as kids, we all watched Disney and it was that thought of like Prince Charming meeting the princess, living happily ever after. Disney doesn't teach you that you go through, you know, seasons and you go through eras and people come into your life for a reason, a season or a lifetime. And the biggest mistake we make is putting the wrong person in the wrong box because we go, oh, this is my forever princess. And it, growing up and having, I think you need to have your heart broken a couple of times to kind of understand how to calibrate that.
What is who you are? Like heartbreak's heavy.
Yeah.
And it's like who you're going to be after this is going to be really important to how you actually do carry yourself going into the next relationship.
100%. And that's what I often look at mates who come in and out of relationships, and I feel like when they don't give themselves enough time in between to answer those questions or sit with who they are in this space, they inevitably just go into the next relationship the same version as they were and repeat the experience.
Well, this comes back to they're not being authentically them and they're using that girl as a almost like a dopamine hit.
It's a validation.
Yeah. And I've been in that plenty of times. I'll start seeing someone and I haven't done the work on myself. I haven't fixed the issues that I just brought out of that relationship. Yeah. And they have a new person in front of you and every time you see them, you feel great. When you're not with them, you feel anxious and like you probably need to fix something but you don't do it. You don't see them, you feel great again.
Yeah.
It's like using them as a drug.
Absolutely.
It's the exact same. Like you're not addicted to it, but you're covering up your feeling.
Oh yeah. You become addicted to who you are with them.
Mm.
You haven't been able to understand how you can achieve being that person by yourself.
I was going to ask you, cause I looked back at an old video that you had on Instagram.
How deep did you go? How deep a stalk did you?
All the way to the bottom. Accidentally like a first photo. Like, this guy's in there. But it was talking about when you start up your dance studio.
Yeah.
And this was the second one you started up, and it started up during COVID.
Mm.
And then you mentioned that your relationship or your marriage was falling apart as well.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to work out where your headspace was in those moments and how you obviously pulled yourself out of them.
Man, that was the time, hey, because that was, so in 2018, I took over the first dance studio. 2019, I took over a second. And so I was going for like aggressive expansion, was already out of my comfort zone with everything that was happening. And then the stress of all of that kind of compounded and the marriage fell apart at the top of 2020 before COVID even hit. So when COVID hit, my natural instinct was to be Sid the Entertainer. I was like, that's okay. You've played characters your whole life. You can put on a mask, go out into the world, and, you know, have a smile on your face. The weirdly beautiful thing about COVID and the whole world shutting down was that I didn't have an audience that I had to perform for. So I was able to sit by myself for the first time and actually feel the entire gamut of those emotions. Like, I sat with the grief. That was the first time I discovered meditation in a way that I'd heard about it, tried it before, but I'd never used it to center myself. And so suddenly when everything from the outside was ripped, all those, you know, definitions that I'd put, I'm a studio owner, married, I'm, you know, this, like all the things I'd done, suddenly those things were stripped away. I was forced to come back to that question of who is Sid? And I had lost that in the years leading up to it. So it was, and now when I, you know, when I teach people to go through it, I'm such a big advocate of feeling the emotion. Like, to deal or to heal yourself from the emotion, you have to go through it. You have to treat that grief properly, even if it's something as small as, if you're growing as a person, you're going to experience an ego death. So there is going to be an element of grief, an element of mourning that has to occur before you hit acceptance and then eventually gratitude. But if you don't allow yourself to go through that initial, so often, you know, this is where people kind of talk about this woo-woo stuff of it being like toxic positivity, because everyone's just like, you know, happy thoughts. If you're feeling down, flip it. You know, flip it. What's the positive of that? And I'm like, that's not necessarily the healthiest way to go about it, because if you're just doing that, that's the equivalent of me having slapped a smile on my face and just trying to push through it without actually acknowledging what was happening.
Mm, and feeling that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's going to suck.
It has to.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Because that was, like, I now look back at that and I'm, again, such a big believer that everything happens for a reason. The universe gives you what you need, not what you want. And I look at the version of Sid that I am today and I know that I wouldn't be this version of Sid but for that trauma. And so that grief gave way to acceptance, to being like, okay, it is what it is, let's just get through it, to now being like, in every fiber of my body, so grateful for having been through that.
Yeah, your failures are not even your failures, man, but like, not just your failures, but the tough times, like the really tough times when you need to like go in on who you are.
Yeah,
that's so important. And like you say, don't just, oh, everything's okay, everything's fine.
Yep.
And trying to put yourself around people that not see through the bullshit, but know that it's okay to be not fine around them, and like hold that space for them that they can open up, and you don't have to, because we're talking about this, people always want to give advice to people in those situations, where it's sometimes like, if you got to feel something, man, you don't need advice. You need a hug and a shoulder kind of thing. And it's like being okay with either being that person or knowing who to go to be that person.
Yeah.
Because when you're in those points, like, there's nothing no one can really do.
No.
And that's just how it is.
Nah.
You just got to feel it for what it is.
And you're so right. Like, it's finding the right people or the right environments that support that part of the journey. Because, yeah, you will need the advice when you're on the other side. But when you have that advice at that, it's like receiving the advice at the wrong time.
Mm.
And you're just not ready to... Yes. To accept it.
And I guess knowing those people.
Yeah.
Knowing the people in your life that can play that role properly.
Yep.
And I guess it all comes back to understanding yourself enough to know, it's like, okay, I got the playbook on me.
Yeah.
So I need to go see Bill or Bob or whoever it may be in your life that you know can get you out of that funk.
The person who can just hold the space for you to feel. Then, you know, the person who can go and give you the advice or help you see the positivity when you're at the point where you're ready to see the positivity.
In those moments when you were having to deal with all those different things, did you have a person that you went to that kind of pulled you out of that?
My parents were my rocks. Yeah, like it was tough at the start because there was this, and it was never any pressure from them, but being Indian, there's this kind of unspoken cultural pressure that you grow up with that Indians don't get divorced. That's just not a thing we do. The way our culture kind of works is, you know, if there's an issue in a relationship, it's like the whole community, your whole tribe bands together to help you kind of get out of it. So there was that initial, I don't know, it was kind of like an uncomfortability, like, oh, who do I go to or who do I turn to for this? And then not knowing how my parents would take it. And then to have my parents step up and be the first, my dad was the first to be like, okay, it is what it is. This is what's happened. How do we get you through it? And I was blown away to have that support from them straight off the bat. And he was just my dad's really like, he's got a really stoic mentality. So he's just naturally, he's like, okay, let's look at everything, pick what you can control, accept what you can't, and then let's put them in two piles and then just focus on this. Mm-hmm. And so to have had that mentality guide me through it was fantastic. While at the same time, so the marriage thing was happening, the business is under all the pressure of COVID. Suddenly I've got two warehouse spaces that I can't have people in. The rules are changing every single week. So there was a lot happening at the same time.
I like it how there's a lot happening and then also you had that time to check in with you.
Yep.
It's like chaos, but mixed in with the chaos is just bliss.
Oh, man, absolutely. That was such a weird contrast because when I'd step back into the chaos, the more I spent in the bliss, the easier it was to step back into the chaos with that whole idea of like, it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it too shall pass.
Yep.
It's all good.
Yep.
It'll work itself out.
Put one foot in front of the other. That was it. That's all I could do. One
That's
day
crazy
at a time.
What we turn into chaos. Like we create our own chaos.
100%.
And then stress about it.
Yeah. Because like I now see that things are just what they are. The whole it is what it is. I get the isness of the thing. Mm. And the good or bad is just the lens at which you look at it through.
Mm.
And that's a choice we can make.
I just get so angry when people say it is what it is because I would always think, and there's a part of me that still does, like we do control so much.
Yeah.
But I get that it's coming from a place of it is what it is in the sense of it's all okay.
Yeah.
Not the sense of like, oh, it'll be fine. I'll let it go. I won't do it. Like it's almost like giving it to luck in a way.
Yeah.
That's what I don't like about it because I don't think you should, like luck's a real thing, but we create it.
Absolutely.
But people that just go, oh, he's lucky because I'm like, no, he works his ass off. So you can't just throw luck at those people. And I guess I always tied that in with it is what it is, was just people saying, oh, he's lucky. Whatever, in that sense kind of.
Yeah, for me, it is what it is, understanding that separation.
Mm. So surrendering in a way.
Yeah. So you really understand, you know, you control the things you can change. You accept the things you can't. And then you have the wisdom to know the difference. The isness of the it is what it is accepting the things you can't control. Because by all means, control the things you can. That's within your power. You do what you can. But in that, you have to accept that there are things that are outside your control.
Mm. And being okay with that.
Being
completely fine.
Yeah.
Talking about things in control, did your parents have an arranged marriage?
No.
They didn't?
No. So they met at university.
True.
Yeah.
Do you have friends, family, people you know that got arranged marriages?
Yeah, my cousin, he like grew up in the States and then, you know, dated and everything there and then one day woke up and was like, nah, hate the dating scene here. Mom, I trust your judgment. Find me a wife.
And it worked.
It worked. And she, like, their family is the most beautiful family. His wife is the most beautiful fit for him and his personality. His kids are amazing. Like, it works.
I was going to say, that's a twist on it is what it is kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because you have control, but you also.
Yeah.
Cultural pressure, family pressure. Like.
Yep.
That's a tricky one.
Oh, man. It's a whole thing. And I mean, growing up here in Australia, there is this. Like, I'm torn between the two cultures because I am, you know, I'm still very connected to my Indian culture, but then very much connected to the Australian culture that's kind of raised me. And so often I'll have conversations with mum where she'll be like, are you ready for me to find you a wife? Oh, yeah, mum. She'll occasionally be like, how about now? I went back to India last year, and I sat down and my grandma's like, I've got three options for you. I was like, okay, let's go.
Did you at least look at him?
Yeah, dude. The thing is, this is what blows my mind, right? Here, like maths, right? Yeah, yeah. Maths is an entire reality TV show. In India, that's just how you get married. I'm like, this is the whitest thing ever. Like,
it's like all shock and awe.
Yeah. Oh my God, you've had someone picked for you? You didn't choose yourself? I'm like, bro, that's a Tuesday.
That's just every second day. Yeah. Oh man, I just can imagine. Have you ever watched Gogglebox?
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine Gogglebox to an Indian family. Be like, are you fucking kidding me?
How is this watchable? This is just real
it's
life.
It's like the Truman Show for India. Oh man.
Man, and it's a different, but it makes sense and it works. And you look at arranged marriages and you look at the success of arranged marriages because there are other factors. So again, it's like, you know, following the heart versus following the gut and the mind and stuff. And we follow our heart often to the detriment of the other things. Whereas then you look at an arranged marriage and there's all these other the factors that someone outside the heart has put into consideration, like the cultural fit, other, you know, emotional fit, spiritual fits, all of that stuff.
I would hope my mum would have a pretty good fit for me.
Yeah, would you? Okay, I want to flip it. Yeah, would you be open to an arranged marriage? Like, do you think...
If my mum and dad were picking, or just...
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. And the way an arranged marriage works as well, just to explain, it's not like they pick you a girl and you're like, you have to marry that girl. It's like...
It's a shotgun wedding.
No, it's like... it's like Tinder...
Yeah.
But with your parents swiping for you.
Yeah.
Right?
We should make a reality TV show.
We should.
But just actually just get the, like, it'll pretty much be maths.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That parents are picking.
And that's so, like, these, sometimes the experts, like, the stuff is picked is just for drama's sake. But your parents don't want that for you.
No, they want you happy.
Exactly.
So I got a phone call the other day. They rang me up and they're like, do you want to come on? I was like, no. Really? I never watched it. I watched the trailer. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I go, nah.
Yeah.
It's just got like dramatized now.
Oh, it's man. Like, it's like where reality TV. I've heard someone quoted as where reality TV stars go to die. I'm like, it's not. That doesn't sound like a vibe.
Oh, man. Nah, it doesn't seem like the one. But yeah, it would be super interesting to actually see.
Yeah.
Like, so your grandma had these three.
Yep.
What do we think?
Oh, so they weren't, grandma hadn't done her research entirely. One of them was single. I'm like, grandma, that's not how it works. You can't, like, you gotta come at me with.
Grandma's got the dog, you know. So grandma, these two have got boyfriends, but you're better.
Yeah. She's like, they're not married yet. So there's no ring on the finger.
Sliding in.
Oh, grandma.
Like, then you should have put a ring. Yeah. Puts Beyonce on.
So. Yeah, yeah. She's like, it's not serious till it's serious. He's got it in there with a chance.
Oh, man.
But it's just interesting that the differences in what we're looking for, like, there are similarities in what we're looking for both of us, but differences as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your first wife, that was you guys met somewhere.
That was me doing my own thing, man, and now I can't be trusted to my own devices. So my family's like,
so they bring that up all the time as well. It's like, well, that one didn't work, so we're our shot now.
Anytime I try to put in anything, like, say, do we know how you like to decide? Imagine. No, no.
I find this is gonna sound really stupid, but you've got obviously such a good Indian accent.
Yeah.
Because you are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I told you this is my natural accent. I've had to develop this Australian accent for everyone here.
Was that challenging to and did you feel like it just came natural from being here?
It comes natural for me to mimic accents. So like when I'm over in the States, I unconsciously drop into an American sounding accent, same when I'm over in the UK. And I think that was because when I was young, I bounced in those critical years, I was bouncing between Australia and India. So it kind of never, like, my accent would just change just so that I felt understood.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a good point because we talked about before being authentic.
Yeah.
But also being authentic, you do fit into different groups in different ways.
Yeah.
And that's okay as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and you said that with your accent. You said you just changed slightly.
Yeah.
You're still you.
Yeah.
But you changed to fit into a group.
Yes.
And that's like, you just don't want to change too much or change for the wrong reasons, but
altering
yourself in slight ways.
So that, I think that's the difference between changing your being, who you are, versus changing your doing.
Mm.
So we all change behaviors to kind of fit in, as long as that behavior is, if it's in if it's congruent with who you are, then that comes out of your being. But I mean, there are people who change their behaviors entirely to people please and fit in. And, you know, I've been there and done that as well.
Do you feel like you can do that well, where you're almost a chameleon to different settings and different people?
Yeah.
You would be around a lot of different people.
Oh, yeah.
And perfect examples. I've got friends that wouldn't hang out with other friends, but I love both of them.
Yes.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
Do you feel that?
I have the same. Yeah, for sure. Just from, I mean, it's reached a point where the people that in my circle probably could hang out because we're all energetically all kind of the same, but just from different
hobbies, different things. Yeah. They're like, it's not like they're going to see each other and be like, I hate that person, but just the interests are different.
Yeah.
And how they are. Some people are really high energy. Some people are real low energy. Some people, and I feel like you're saying, you can adapt to those different scenarios or environments and just kind of be Sid, but this version of what Sid is. You're saying here with like being a confidence coach, what's the biggest blockage you probably see in people with not being confident?
Man, it's just it's a series of self-limiting beliefs. And the biggest one is worthiness, because that it's that sense of not feeling worthy to receive whether it's the respect, whether it's the attention, whether it's the adoration, whether it's just even to receive love. People struggle to receive love. And that all comes down to just that the filter through which they see themselves. And the second that filter's changed, that's where the confidence comes from. So the stuff I teach is both the mental game, the inside out, so dealing with those self-limiting beliefs, and then also working with meeting them from the outside in. So working with body language. How do you stand to trick yourself into feeling more confident? How do you practice eye contact? Where do you put your shoulders? Where do you put your hands? You know, when people that stand in front of photos and they don't know what to do with their hands, like, what do I do with this? Just having that sense of knowing, okay, I know exactly what to do with that, gets rid of those little blocks.
Are there like kind of tricks or tools or tactics
and
stuff that you normally implement onto someone to start going down that path?
Absolutely, man. And it's all like the secret is exposure therapy. You know, that's what I went through. The only way you can get over it is by facing it again and again. And the idea is to make that journey as attainable as possible. So you never want the challenge to be so hard that it's overwhelming. It's giving yourself these small incremental wins that ease you along the path and help you uncover that.
Mm. So if you want to start getting into, you want to run a marathon, you don't say, I want to run a marathon. You go,
exactly.
I'll start walking to the beach.
Yep. It's what's the smallest, like this is a Jim Quick thing that I love. What's the smallest, simplest step? So if you want to get motivated to move towards something, you need the energy to do it. You need to have the purpose and the why, but then you just break it down to the smallest, simplest step. And then you start to reward yourself for just taking that step. So you start to build a dopamine cycle around the effort that you're putting in, rather than, because it's daunting to be like, oh my God, I got to give a speech in front of these people. And it could even be a wedding where you're speaking in front of your family, and that throws people. But if you just do the small things along the way, practice your,
you build the momentum.
That's it.
You build the momentum.
Yeah.
Like I can just think of an example that I went through today. Like I woke up and I was like, I want to go for a run. And a run seemed like, I'm sore. Don't really want to run. So then I was like, just go for a walk.
Yeah.
So I started walking, and then I walked for like 300 meters. I'm like, I can run. And then you run.
Yeah.
But I had to trick myself to go aim for the lower thing that you know you can achieve easier. And then you probably will end up achieving the bigger thing anyway.
Yep.
In the process of doing that.
It's that thing of like, you know, if you want to, I love this example. If you want to practice, like get used to flossing your teeth every night, you just, I'm just going to floss one tooth. Who's going to floss one? Like the second you start and you do it, you're like, oh, I'm already here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's all it takes.
It's like that push.
Yep.
That push into that new direction.
Yep.
With what was it that drew you towards doing the hip hop thing as well? What was that? Is that just, obviously you said you're doing acting and stuff in school, and then
the
hip hop picked up, and then that kind of grabbed all your attention?
Well, man, I was always like, I grew up watching Michael Jackson, Usher, you know, imitating Justin Timberlake. Like I loved dancing. As an Indian kid as well, like Bollywood is such an intrinsic part of our culture. Like we just grow up dancing. So dance was always a part of what I loved. Then hip hop music just spoke to me. So I used to just freestyle at home with my bro. And then in high school, the high school I was at offered breaking as a school sport. So suddenly I got to train it. And that was, you know, year 11, year 12 was the first time I actually took it seriously and started having someone else teach me rather than just freestyling. And so that just lit my soul on fire. I love the idea of hip hop. I love the culture. I love the music. I love the fashion. Everything just really spoke to me, which is, I love the idea. Like, that's globalization, right? I'm an Indian kid in Australia being raised by
Michael Jackson.
Yeah. And so hip hop just became a natural flow. When I was in university, I started joining hip hop crews. They became my closest friends because we'd all go hit the clubs on the weekend to train our sets. Like, growing up, my life was literally like, you got served. Like, someone would get a text late at night being like, we're meeting at this club Saturday night, bring your crew. And we would go out and we'd battle each other in these nightclubs.
Dude, that'd be so much fun.
It was wild.
So much fun.
It was. Like, we learnt hip hop in parties. We never went to studios to learn it. We would train it with our crew in the city at night because we could get in front of the university or financial district buildings had big glass windows. So those became our mirrors, and that's how we trained.
Man, that's so good.
Yeah.
Did you feel like that feeling? And I haven't felt it often, but sometimes when you lose yourself in those moments when you're dancing in your body.
100%.
And it's like you actually just drop all feeling of like care. It's like, I'm doing what I know I need to do.
Yeah. Yep. And I used to find it so freeing. Like, I used to love going to nightclubs. I still do, man. Or festivals. And I go and jam like towards the back where there's space. Mm. And I just let my body do what it feels like doing. And it's like music take the wheel. And it is. It's so liberating.
And that feeling, and then the people that are attracted to that, like, you always get people that come start dancing with you, you meet people. It's just that real, raw, easy connection.
It's super infectious.
Through just jumping around.
Yep.
And it's so funny how so much of it, myself included, will see someone dancing, having the best time, and be like, I wish I was that confident, or I wish I could do that.
Yep.
And you have this idea of judgment of other people, but you're looking at that person wishing you were them.
Absolutely.
And then if you kind of be that person, you're thinking to other people like, do they wish they were me, or do they think I look stupid?
Yeah.
That thing that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter at all.
It's when you're in that space and you can tell when someone is doing something, being like, are people looking at me? Mm. Versus just in it for them.
When you're just happy, man.
Yeah. And that raw energy is so infectious. Yeah.
Yeah, I think if you can carry that, that's how, like, if you want to make friends,
dude,
go dance at a festival.
Absolutely.
And you will make plenty of friends.
Hands down.
Do you know Nathan Thirst?
Oh, name's familiar.
He does. He's like a dancer from Billy Heads. And I met him and he was with a crew of people. They were just at the Burley Pavilion. And they're just all like dancing. I found out afterwards that he like actually is like a professional dancer.
Yeah.
And they're all dancing and like together. And I was just by myself. So I was like, I'm just going to dance with these guys. And started dancing with them and just got along with them all. And one of the guys, Blake, he's one of my good mates now. He came to the podcast with me. And so it's just from that connection through dancing.
That's amazing.
And realizing that, because it's funny when you go to a dance floor and no one's dancing, and then one person starts dancing, and then the whole dance floor grows. And then if you're not dancing, you're the outcast.
Yep.
And it's how that twist of like, you go from an outsider to an insider.
Oh, man. Knowing that as well. So I used to get hired as a icebreaker. So there are venues here in the Goldie that used to hire me to come in and pretend to be drunk. And I'd pretend to be a punter. And I would just walk around. I'd just start a conversation. I'd make friends with people. And they had these shows, and the shows would turn into it would turn into a nightclub. But no one would jump onto the dance floor. So I would make maybe two or three critical friends. I had the people that I could see were a fun time. Be like, all right, when the music stops, you're coming and having a dance with me. And then I would jump on the dance floor with these people, and it just needs someone to pop that bubble, and then suddenly it just gives everyone permission to jump on. I used to love it.
I was going to say, creating a dance floor?
Yeah.
That's a...
Yeah.
Your tax man must be really... It's like, so you go on all these bars, you're selling happiness, you're getting paid under the table, you're pretending to be drunk. I'm like,
what do you do?
Sid, what's going on here, mate? We need to have a...
Just being Sid.
You're going to be audited soon.
Just being Sid.
Oh, happiness dealer cards. That's going around. That's so good. But it's, man, like you say, people just need to push into something.
Yeah.
And people don't want to be the first one.
Yes.
But the first one gets if you're the first one to do something,
yep,
you get so much more out of it.
Yeah.
Than if you're just kind of a sheep. And it's not bad being a sheep if you're going dancing, but like no. you follow in.
Yep.
But you let, and this is a lesson I learned. It's like if you just do stuff because other people are doing it, you're letting other people control the outcome of your life.
Yo, 100%.
And it's like if you're not willing to step out on your own and do what you need, know you need to do,
yeah,
you're literally making other people make your life decisions.
Yep.
And I was talking to my brother about this because he was talking about moving from where he lived.
Mm.
And he lives right near my grandparents and they just had a little girl. And he's just like, oh, but she'll be around her grandparents for a while and all this. And I was like, you can't let your grandparents determine your life. And he's like, I'm not. I'm like, you just said you don't want to move away because you want to be near, like not that you don't want to be around them, but you're saying it, you're not moving what you want to do because of someone else.
It's like another constraint, an environmental constraint.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we do that. People do that all the time, man. We go, oh, I'll do that if someone else does it. You know, I'll go up if someone else goes up. Or I'll go, I'll leave this if this condition is met or when that happens, rather than just trusting that intuitive pull and just going.
Mm, and stepping out.
Yeah.
Did you find that when you started to step out? Because when you were being a lawyer and then doing the dancing, did you feel like you needed to step, like before obviously that decision where it was like go to Nickelodeon or go become a lawyer, before that moment was there pulls to
there was
just
yeah,
drop it and change?
There was, man, and it was not even like pulls towards, it was almost being pushed away from law. Like I started to notice that I was becoming a really cynical person, because in the world of law no one comes to you with a happy story. You know, they either come to you when everything is turned to shit, or they'll come to you with something that's good and be like, okay, this is the contract, tell me all the ways this can go to shit. So that started really mucking with my head. I am this normal, happy person, and I started noticing my mind getting wired to the opposite, just to be really cynical. And so that started to frustrate me a little bit. So that was kind of making me go, okay, maybe this is not the type of law I want to practice. I don't know if it was a type of law or just law in general. But I definitely noticed the feel in me that changed between being, you know, stuck at the desk versus then teaching five-year-olds how to dance, or being out on the dance floor with my crew. And I was like, oh, this is what really lights my soul on fire. Mm. This is where my happiness is.
Did you check into your values at that point?
Yeah, because the thing that was really keeping me in law was the narrative that I was kind of prescribing to my whole life. You know, you go to school, you get good grades. Those grades will get you into a good university. That good university will get you a good job. That good job is the definition of success. And I didn't feel, that didn't make me feel successful.
What's your definition of success now?
Happiness. Like I chase, the two things that I chase and the two things I love more than anything is peace and novelty. So I love new experiences. I love meeting new people. I love going new places. I love that sense of novelty. And I just love things that bring me peace. And so it's not really about, you know, chasing a lifestyle or a money or actually it's, I look for those two things. I look for peace and novelty in the moments I'm in. So rather than being like, I'll be happy when that happens, I stop and look around and I'm like, yo, this is good.
Mm. Yeah, the goalposts are always moving.
Yeah.
Always moving.
Yeah, and you got to be happy in the moment. If you're always delaying your happiness or, you know, delaying your success, that's like you're never going to be...
Never going to catch it.
Nah, ever.
Ever. I'll be happy when.
Yeah.
I'll be happy when.
Yep.
I'll be happy if I get this.
A quote that I loved in one of my business mentors, Bob Proctor, back in the day, I didn't understand it as a kid, but when he said, the goal in life is to be satisfied but never content. And he's like, if you're satisfied, you're at every stage in life, you have this mix of being completely satisfied with where you are, but you have just this touch of discontentment that allows you to drive and allows you to grow. And he's like, it's finding that balance of having both.
What's that kind of comes back to the small town thing and people that are content where they are.
Yeah.
They don't.
That's
when you stay there.
Yep.
They don't want to do more. And it's just funny how it all comes back to it's not right or wrong.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not.
Different, yeah. Different horses for different courses. Some people just flow that way, and if that floats their boat, so be it.
Exactly. I was going to say, what's your most memorable performance that you've ever had?
Dude, I was invited to Buckingham Palace to open for the Queen. So I
was popping and locking for, for Elizabeth.
Yeah. Lizzie just wanted some fire. No, not even to dance, man. As an MC, like I was working for the Gold Coast Comm Games, and they just allowed me to be myself. So I was just allowed to do different brands of Sidness through this 2-year process, and I'd created this kind of brand within the brand where every event had a touch of Sid. So then when they had the Queen's Baton Relay launching in Buckingham Palace, they couldn't imagine having it, given that I'd made myself a part of the GC 2018 brand, without me being there. And they flirted the idea and they were like, is it all right if we have our hype man come in, like, get all the delegates on their feet, teach them a dance before the formalities kick off? And it's normally a very stoic, you know, very serious event. But I was there with the Blue Koala. And so we got everyone on their feet, some 300 delegates of the Commonwealth, taught them a dance, got them all hyped. And then I was just, I had this like moment of looking off stage and having a flashback of, you know, like my mum standing in the wings with a vomit bucket and me being like, how did that kid get here? It was wild.
Man, that's awesome. That's so good. And the Queen was there.
Yeah. She loved it. Lizzie loved it. Rest her soul.
That's yeah, you have those moments when you gotta pinch yourself, hey?
Yeah. Yeah.
And go like, you wouldn't believe yourself if you told yourself where you're at right now and what you were doing.
Someone once told me that we grow into the person that our younger selves needed.
Yeah.
And I now look at that and I'm like, that's who I wanna be for like that next generation. If my younger self could see that in that moment, there'd be complete disbelief. Like, doesn't make sense.
It's the whole thing. It's imagine if it could get better. Mm. And then imagine if it could get even better than you can imagine now.
Yep.
And that's how good it can get.
Yep.
If you, yeah, man, that's, yeah. What a trip, hey?
Oh,
go
dude.
From one to the other.
Absolutely. And it just, like, it's in that non-linearness. Because, I mean, when I was in the office, everything was like, this is what the next year is going to be. This is what the next year is going to be. And that never really gelled with me. I love living in the unknown. I love the world of infinite possibilities that exist in front of us. And when I have this conversation with my mates who are in law, you know, who have families and stuff, it stresses them out. Again, different people operate in different ways, but they're like, I couldn't imagine not knowing what this next year is going to hold. You know, I've got a plan in place. This is the plan and this is how the plan is going to go. And I'm like, nah, I've got the business plans and everything going the way they need to go. But I love leaving space for magic.
Mm. Have you seen the movie? I think it's called Parasite. It was like an award-winning. It was the only movie. I think it won an Oscar or something. It wasn't an English
film. The Korean film.
Yeah. And there's one thing the dad's saying is they're talking and he says, he's talking about making plans.
Yeah.
Like if you make plans, they can go wrong.
Yeah.
If you don't make plans, nothing goes wrong.
Yeah.
Which I can see both sides of
that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But it's that whole thing of going into something with no intention of getting anything out of it, but instead just experiencing what it is.
Yeah.
And obviously it's good to plan some things.
Mm.
We're not stupid, but like sometimes I go to a city and I don't know what I want to do.
Yeah.
And you start going through the city and something grabs your eye and you go into that and then you go into this and there's just, you just end up having this amazing day.
Yep.
And you don't have deadlines, you don't have somewhere you've got to be, you don't have someone you've got to, like it's just where I end up is where I end up.
Yeah.
And it comes back to the whole thing, it is what it is.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's the thing, you surrender to whatever will come at you or wherever you will go.
Yeah.
And just be okay with that.
Absolutely. And I'm a massive advocate of both. Like, you know, I think it's important to have a plan or at least a vision. Mm. I think goals are helpful, but at the same time, I feel like you don't want to bind yourself by the goal because what if you're capable of so much more? You know, what if in just your authentic being, yes, set the direction, but, you know, what if you're capable of surpassing that? So if you're really in line with your, you know, your calling or your purpose or that drive that's pulling you, as long as that's kind of in line with where your goals are or how your goals are being set, I reckon that's the winning combination.
What are your goals at the moment? What's your big goals?
The big goal at the moment is in the realm of confidence coaching. So the question that I'm living in is how do I deliver the most impact? How can I be of most service? So living in that question is coming up with some really cool answers. And I'm also kind of being pulled back into my culture. So feeding back into that narrative of now recognizing the journey I've taken as a first generation immigrant, I'm like, how can I apply these skills or use these skills to help people in a similar situation to me? How can I help other Indians?
Do you find we always seem to not go home, but you feel as you get older that home becomes okay?
Yeah.
You feel a bit of more of a pull towards it?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, I know I've had that journey through school. I would, you know, I try to distance myself from being Indian because it was an uncomfortable thing to be. I wouldn't like to have friends over to my house because of, you know, how my house always smelled of curry. You know, my parents spoke and there were all these things that I used to be so embarrassed by that I now love.
You're proud of it.
I'm proud of. I now look around and, you know, living in here on the Gold Coast, there's not a lot of, you know, Indians here are few and far between compared to Melbourne. Melbourne, they're everywhere. And so I've never noticed my Indianness as much as I have when I moved to the Gold Coast. And now I'm so, so proud of it being here and being an Indian here.
Do you think you would ever go home or like to India?
I'd go back to visit.
But to live or but anything?
Probably not to live. I just feel like I'd probably go for stints at a time. But there are just comforts, lifestyles, things that are here in Australia that I've just become so accustomed to.
How does it feel when you go back? Because I know personally when I'd go back home, even though it's in Australia still,
yep.
Sometimes I'd go back and be like, oh, I'm so glad I'm not here.
Yeah.
And other times I'd go back and appreciate it for what it was. Yep. And I do that more now where I go back and I appreciate, okay, this is different again.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful in its differences.
I love that. I love the beauty of the differences. But I went, like, this time it was just Dad and I that went over to India at the end of last year, and we just had this moment where we were just walking the streets. And I honestly, like, I'm so grateful that my parents made the call to bring us over here. And they, the main decision, you know, decision-making thought behind that was the opportunities that this country provided my brother and I, that India didn't, just because of the nature of the competition. There are that many people that those opportunities are few and far between. I don't think I would be a hip-hopping vibe creator had I grown up in India. Like, I would think I'd always be who I was meant to be, but it would have been a very different journey.
Is when you go back and visit, are there places like that there though that you can kind of connect with, just to, like, do you see it at all, or is it just kind of not even a thing?
I'm an anomaly back there as well. That kind of exists a little bit more in like the Bollywood world. There are bigger, flashier personalities, but it's just not. Yeah, it's not really a done thing, or, you know, it's not as easily integrated into events and stuff the way it is here.
Okay. And I'm just trying to think for a second. Because when you're playing that personality and going into it as well, when you're on stage and stuff here, because I was going to talk back to you did hosting at the Commonwealth Games.
Yep.
When you were doing that, do you find you almost, again, it comes back to you kind of adapt and change. Do you feel like when you get out on stage and present, you kind of, it's like with the accent, you change your accent a little bit. Do you feel like there's this extra bit of you that comes out in those moments?
Yeah, a little bit. Like the same way I change my accent, like I change the way I speak when I'm on a stage mic, but that's just to project that energy a bit more. If I was to speak that way here, or like in a, you know, in a conversation, people would be like, dude, what's it like, are you okay?
Leave the room.
And even emceeing, that personality, I very much love playing the role of like hype MC. I love raising vibration that way, but, you know, I get booked for events where that's not appropriate. So, you know, I've MC'd for Hoda, had like an orchestra event, and I couldn't come out for this like beautiful orchestra. I'm like, yo, what's up? You know, like, so I had to read the room, and, you know, I came out with a very, still carrying that same energy, but with a sense of gravitas. So I kind of change and vary who the type of MC I need to be for the audience that I'm hosting for.
I was going
to
say, what did the Royals get when you came out?
The Royals booked me as a hype MC.
Oh, so you could just...
I was like, I literally, I've never thought I'd be like, Buckingham Palace, how you feeling? Like, they just let me... I asked them, I'm like, can I... Like, is this...
Can I throw down?
Yeah, yeah, can I like go... And they were like, that's why you're here. They were like, this is what you've... Like, the brand you'd built through the Comm Games. We want to give... these like these really stoic Commonwealth nations a taste of what Gold Coast is going to be like.
How did you link up with the Commonwealth Games? How did that all come
about? Man, I auditioned as a dancer. So they were releasing the mascot. The mascot had backup dancers, like they'd had this whole choreographed thing to release the mascot. And I auditioned as a dancer. And by that stage, I was already working as an MC in Melbourne. I'd only just moved to Gold Coast, but I was working as an MC in Melbourne. I'd done stuff for the... local council and events down there. So I just walked back into the room and turned to them and was like, I don't know if you guys have thought about this, but if your mascot doesn't have a voice, I'm pretty handy on a mic. Like, just let me know. And then I didn't get the dance gig, but they were launching the mascot the next morning at this business breakfast. And it was a really like stuffy, stoic affair. You know, everyone, Gold Coast socialite, sitting down, gala breakfast sort of thing. And they were like, do you reckon you could do a little dance the mascot? And they're like, could you teach everyone a dance? I was like, watch me. And so that was the first taste of like my hype MCing.
Please tell me it's like, I taught the queen to dance. I think I got this.
Yeah, yeah, that was before the queen. Okay, that's how it all started. And so that's how, that's where the brand was kind of created. And when they saw the energy I brought, it just was a perfect marriage of like the koala's energy and then my energy as an MC. And then that stayed consistent the whole time till it reached Buckingham Palace.
Till it reached the top of the top.
Man, that was...
And are you still working with the Commonwealth Games at all?
No, so that was the Gold Coast Games. So every Games has its own organising committee.
Yep, yep.
Yep, so I'm still active as an MC here for sporting events. So I now do stuff for the Australian Olympic Committee. So keeping fingers crossed if any AOC is watching this. Brisbane 2032, hit me up. But yeah, so I've been on the mic for the AOC as we've progressed closer to the Brisbane Games. So,
do you get more nervous to dance or MC? Or is it the same?
Nah, probably the same. Oh, maybe to dance if it's someone else's choreography, because you know things can go wrong. Yeah. Whereas if I'm MCing and I've got a mic in my hand, everything is perfect. You know, if it goes wrong, it's on me and I can fix it.
Yeah. You can work on your feet. What's going to happen with your studios now? Because you still got the two studios.
So I still have the one studio. I can dance. I Can Dance is now in Mermaid Beach. Post COVID, I had to consolidate the two spaces, so I let one space go, moved it all to Mermaid Beach. The studio space there was more conducive to the energy of the direction I wanted to take the studio. You've seen the space. Yeah. You've been in there. It's just a fun, like, safe space for people to express themselves. Like the youngest kids in there are 18 months. My oldest hip hop head has just turned 85. So like the gamut of stuff that happens in there is amazing. We've got two beautiful neurodivergent special needs groups that will come in and train there. There's an Irish dance school that runs out of there. There's a mate of mine has just started like a bachata course that runs out of there. So on top of the jazz, ballet, hip hop, all like all the normal studio stuff, it's just a place for self-expression.
I was going to say, people say laughter is the best medicine.
Yep.
I got to say, dance is probably, it's got to be.
It's got to be number two, bro.
It's got to be up there on the list.
Yeah, and my hip-hop classes is plenty of both.
Yeah, both. Because how important do you think dancing is for people's mental health?
Man, it is. So in terms of like mental wellness, definitely being able to tap into a space of confidence and all that stuff. But in terms of like physical mental health, there was a study that was done that blew my mind. They were looking at Alzheimer's and the onset of Alzheimer's, and they took sports like, the traditional sports that the older generation play, lawn bowls, golf, puzzles, crosswords, Sudokus, and freestyle dancing. And of all of the activities, freestyle dancing was the only activity to reduce the onset of Alzheimer's by something like 86%. It was ridiculous. Just because you were using both your neural networks, but then your motor networks as well. Like it was all happening at the same time. So I like freestyle dancing is one of the greatest things you can do for both body, mind and soul. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah, it just fixes everything.
Yeah.
And it feels good as well.
It feels so good, man. And that became the flip that we made at the studio. So when I moved to Gold Coast, there are like some 300 and something dance studios on the Gold Coast. Like, there are more studios here than any other city in Australia. It's wild. And when I got into this game and took over this studio, I was like, I don't really want a dance studio. There's enough dance studios on the Gold Coast. With my background in personal development and, you know, in personal growth and in confidence, I was like, what would it look like or feel like if we flip the narrative? Because, you know, as a kid, I got put into drama and dance to help me become more confident. Like, confidence was a secondary effect. And so as of, you know, the last couple of years, we flipped that and we were like, what if all we do is teach confidence? Confidence is the primary effect. We just happen to do it through movement. So that's changed the way that we engage with our students, whether they're the kids, the adults. Like, the goal is different. The goal is now not, okay, you come to this class and you learn this set of movements. The goal is you come to this class and you leave feeling more confident, whatever that looks like for you. So I've even changed, like, I don't call my coaches teachers. I hate the word teachers because I believe that no one can teach anyone anything. People can only learn. So the word teacher for me is so egotistical, like, I'm here to teach you. But if you're a coach or a mentor, your goal is to inspire curiosity.
Do you want to say show, not teach?
Yeah, yeah. Or even encourage. Okay. Because the learning can happen. If I've inspired curiosity in my student, they now have a question in their head. I may not be the person they get that answer from. But if I've just inspired the curiosity, the goal is for them to get the answer. The goal is for them to become more confident. It becomes student-focused rather than teacher-focused, being like, I am here to teach you this piece, or I'm here to give you this information. Why aren't you taking this information on?
You almost give them, especially with dance, I guess obviously there's better dancing and worse dancing, but as a beginner, you just, like you say, you want to build the confidence to even try and do it.
Exactly.
You don't have the confidence to try. It doesn't really matter if it's good or bad in that sense. It's, yep, like, if you're not confident moving and having those motions, then it's like you've kind of lost before you've started.
Absolutely. And your desire to get better will only exist if there is a foundation of passion. Like, if you love it. So if you don't, you know, if you don't give people a safe space within which they can just love being themselves, like, excellence comes down the track. Excellence just comes with repetition.
Mm. It's all byproduct of, yeah, of that. It's just so many things come from confidence based, yeah, off that. It's such a valuable commodity that everyone wants to be confident, but they don't know how to make themselves be confident in those, absolutely, situations.
Absolutely. And it goes everything. So the services the people I work with is providing service for personal people, like for one-on-one, but all the way up to businesses and teams. Like, how does a team appear more confident? What does confidence look like on a global scale for a company? If you're a company who's kind of like changing your marketing strategy based on what the trends are, versus you see these companies that are so confident in who they are that it doesn't matter what way the wind's blowing, their vision is constant. Like, that, that sense of confidence exists all the way from the singular to the group.
Yeah, it comes back to listening to your gut. Yeah, because, well, I was thinking about it. I was really indecisive the other day and my day turned to shit.
Mm.
And I wasn't confident in any of the decisions I made. And because of that, I kept second guessing everything.
Yep.
And I think, like, it was just one day.
Yep.
But then I noticed that. I said, this day sucked because I didn't make a confident decision what I wanted.
Yeah.
And because of that, everything around me fell apart.
Yep.
So it's like, you got to have that confidence to make your decision and stick with it.
Absolutely.
And not second guess it and not have voices come in and go, oh, actually, oh, maybe, oh. And then you live in these like two options or two worlds.
Yeah.
And then you don't fully experience either of them properly.
Oh, 100%, man. And people, like, you experience that for a day. There are people that walk around living their whole lives like that are just so uncertain of themselves because their identity is defined by the environment around them. As the environment changes, they feel like their identity needs to change.
Mm. So that's your main focus for the future now, is to build so you're building up a team and you're just going to go either, are you going to work out of the studio or are you going to be more of going to companies and...
A bit of both.
How to be structured.
Yeah, so my vibe creation is three pronged really. So there's a studio that's doing its own thing. That's like the space where I develop confidence through movement. There's my personal vibe creation. So when I'm on stage or in a space manipulating the energy either as an MC or a DJ. And then there's this new step into teaching people how to do those things. And that's happening kind of globally. So that's something that's not tethered to a space. So the markets I'm looking at are across Australia, you know, reaching out to India and over to the States and just wherever people need.
It's good how you have these different options. They feed off each other, but they're also different at the same time.
Yeah.
Makes it feel fresh.
No 2 days are the same, man. I love it. Like I'll be in, start my morning with like movement, meditation, and then get into the day and then whatever happens, well, wherever I'm needed, I'm kind of structure my day as to where I can be of service.
Yeah, that's perfect. So we're going to wrap it up in a sec, but I got some questions that I sent you that I normally try and ask people.
Oh, yeah, hit me.
Yeah, we already threw the one at you about how you want to be remembered. Yeah. What are you scared of?
Dude, I'm scared of just not living up to that potential. Like, and that's a driver for me as well, of not being of impact and service to the extent that I really can be. And this came down to what we were chatting about before was I know that the only thing that's standing in my way is myself. So when I'm faced with those fears, it's just about getting out of my own way and just letting the universe do its thing.
Let it steer you in the right direction.
Yeah.
No, I like that. Next one is, if you could go back and change something in your life, and I almost don't want to ask this question anymore because, again, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
But if there's a point that you could probably go back and say, I might do that differently, would you go back?
No.
You would just...
Nothing. We wouldn't be here having this conversation
at
this moment in this time if I went back and changed anything.
It's the whole, you say good or bad things happen to you. It's like, were you happy right now? You're like, yeah. It's like, well, those bad things made you happy right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Had to happen. What's the best bit of advice you've ever gotten?
The best bit of advice was probably something that I mentioned before, is that those that matter don't mind and those that mind don't matter. And that helped me get over, you know, my fear of what I was going to say. And that helped me develop that sense of saying, building the right people rather than saying the right thing.
What's the worst bit of advice you've ever gotten?
Happy wife, happy life. No. Honestly, so probably the worst.
Oh my god!
That and there's plenty of time to sleep when you're dead.
Yeah,
those two, man. Like for the first one, I now see to build a solid foundation in a relationship, it has to be happy life, happy life. It has to be two happy people coming together that are completely whole. If you're sacrificing your happiness for someone else's happiness, it's that people pleasing behavior, and it's not gonna end well. And the second one, plenty of time to sleep when you're dead. That was coming out of, in Melbourne, there's a massive hustle mentality. Like your success is based upon how busy you are. And in that equation, there was no time for rest. And now having realized that rest is part of the work and switching your brain off, you know, putting the phone down, being present, allowing yourself to daydream, that helps me be a more creative person. That helps me be a more productive person. So not pushing myself. I would push myself to burnout and exhaustion all the time. But now I kind of balance that better.
And people say, yeah, I get that one. Mm. And I do agree with the relationship thing comes back to the whole we were talking about with, if you're not fixing the things you need to fix, you're just going to keep breaking them in a different setting.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's like get your house in order.
Yeah.
Sort your shit before you start trying to like deal with someone else's shit.
Absolutely. Because if you come into that at 100%, then you can, you know, you're the best version of yourself for yourself, for that other person, for the relationship, for your family, for everything.
Hmm. And last one, when's the happiest you've ever been?
Right now, bro.
It's a good studio.
It's a great studio. I've learned that it's just finding the happiness in the moment. just finding that and not holding on to a happiness of the past or the happiness of the, what we were talking about, but the happiness in the future. It's finding that happiness in relishing every single, you know, the way this moment smells, tastes, looks, sounds, feels, and just finding happiness in that.
I like that. I think that's a good way to top it off.
Yeah, man. Well,
Sid the Entertainer. What's your actual last name? Because I just know you were Sid the Entertainer.
Martha.
Okay.
But yeah. Sid the Entertainer's fine.
Sid the Entertainer's good. That's, yeah. That could be the thumbnail.
Happiness dealer. Happiness. If you want happiness, I got you.
Oh, bro. All right. Well, if anyone needs some happiness, you know where to go.
Catch me on Instagram, TikTok, all the things. Sid the Entertainer.
Yeah. Nah, appreciate it, bro. It's been good. Like I said, before I even met you, my housemate obviously came in and did a lesson. And he's like, man, you got to come in. Sid, he's the man. He's high energy. He's great. And all that. And obviously, I couldn't dance at the time. When I had the injury. But I was like, I'll just come anyway and hang out.
Oh, I love that you were there.
Yeah, just been around that. Like, just because it's good, man. It's like people creating.
Yeah.
Like being around people that are creative, whether it be art or dance. Well, it's all art, really. Yeah. But music, podcast, photos, videography, dance. It's all like, if you're around people that want to create, it gives you almost the permission to create at the same time. And I guess that's your message, is absolutely, like, I'm going to live my life this way in the hope that people will see me as a way of, okay, well, if Sid's doing it, I can do it.
100%, man.
And they can use that. So, I appreciate you coming on, man.
Love that, bro. This is such a good chat, dude. Yeah. Love it.
Appreciate you.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.